Session number 9105, reel 2.
Mrs. Gilbert, reel 2. Did you ever see any of the Zeppelin raids?
The Zeppelin raids?
Oh, yes, I saw the Zeppelin come down at Cuffley. That was somewhere in London. And it lit up all London. Because the searchlights were on every night in London. And the people used to go down in the underground stations, take the little bits and pieces, and they were huddled together trying to sleep. But the trains were still running underground. But, oh, it was pitiful to see them there. I saw that Zeppelin one. But I've seen them amongst the clouds. And they tried to fire at them and they missed them, I suppose. And then they went for the observation places. But that Cuffley one, I'll never forget that, though, coming down. But, when I was in the fill-in station, the Land Army staff, the Women's Land Army, I decided to join it. I went to Horseferry Road in London to the depot. We had to strip and have a medical examination. And then we were sent to Oxford. About four of us went to Oxford together. And we were fitted out with uniform. That was a jersey and knickerbockers and a white drilled overall coat and a black brimmed hat, black gaiters and black boots, and a green tie, a green armlet with red letters on in the Women's Land Army printed in it, you see. Well, then I was sent to, see, three or four of us were sent to a farm at Richmond, a dairy farm. Mr. Ballas kept it. And the first day there, we were put to plant young cabbage plants. You see, there were only two old men and boys then helping on the farms. And the farmer came out. He said, they've all got to come out. They weren't planted down far enough by about half an inch. And he asked, he said, anyone here interested in working with horses? My hand shot up quick as lightning, and I was the only one. He had students there as well. And then I was led away to the stables. About 7 or 8 horses there. There was an older man in charge, and he showed me what to do. Feeding, watering, and putting hay in racks and cleaning out the stables. And you were taught how to harness the horse ready for work. There was plenty of work to do in stables. Well, then I was put on a horse and told to take it to the forge, 3 or 4 miles away and through country lanes. And I kept saying, gee up, whoa, I was practicing. And the horse wouldn't stop when we got to the forge. And it stopped at the end of the village. And I got back, the men at the forge laughed because they said, yes, we saw you. So I had to have new shoes fitted for the horse. Then I was hoisted up on the horse again. It was bareback. And I rode all the way back again. It must have been about 4 miles, I suppose. Then I was told to take one horse and go and fix it up to a hoe in the field. They were drawn by one horse. And I did that. I came back again and finished for the day. The next day, I had to take two horses and fix it to harrows in the field. The harrows is after ploughing. Great big things they were to rake all the soil flat. And while I was there, a thunderstorm started. I was a long way from the farm. And it started lightning as well. And I thought, oh dear. Now, I was talking to the horses all the time. If you talk to horses, you know they're all right because you don't know what they're going to be like, you see. And so I packed up and I came back to the farm. The farmer was very pleased I packed up. Terrible storm that was, teemed with rain too. And went in about the next morning, I think it was, because we had lodgings found for us. And we got as far as the gate opposite the farm. There was a field. And at the gateway, there were a crowd of men. And it turned out that one of the ponies belonged to the dairy floats. They had three dairy floats. One of the men had turned his pony out at night, like he always did, with the cows. It turned out a bull was amongst them. And it gored that pony, and they were trying to save it, but it died. And then they cut the pony up in bits afterwards and hung it in the trees, and then they fed it the pigs after. They had a great big lot of pigs there and big boy in bats. And it was shortly after that I was sent to a farm at Bicester, well, near Bicester in Oxford, run by a Mr. Brown. He had about six or seven horses there. Because, you see, I was getting used to horses by that time. I was doing different jobs. And it was in my blood too, because my father was fond of horses.
Had you known what sort of work you might do when you joined the Land Army?
You see, I was sent out on my own. You see, they sent the girls out here and there, wherever they were wanted, you see. And, of course, I knew what to do with the horses. And two of them, they had great big scabs on the sides of them. Different parts, big things, about 3 inches big. The first night I had to turn them out in the field. I turned all the horses out up the lane in the field. As I was going out the gate, there were police each side of the gateway. Of course, I didn't know what for, but the lady where I was lodging told me they'd had a police court case. They'd had a Belgian there, and when he lost his temper, he used to cut pieces out the horses. Of course, I had to put stuff on them. Tire stuff on them to heal it up. And of course they were never used, but they went out in the fields. And used to have to collect them again in the morning. They were nearly always round the gate ready to come in. Then it meant feeding and watering and everything else again and going right through. Then you had to fill up the corn bins and do all sorts and let the horses out one at a time for water. And they'd go back in again, because they'd been trained to it. And they'd go in, and there you are. Then you'd harness them up, ready for the field work, whatever you'd got to do. Well, sometimes it was take one, and take a cart, the water cart, fill it up with water, and take it to a distant field, and fill up the tanks and the water troughs. And then we used to have to take the farmyard manure from the stables, because you used to have to clean out stables and rebed and everything. You used to take the manure up in the wagons, and then you'd do a bit of muck spreading. You didn't take any notice of the dirt. Didn't take a bit of notice of it. And another day, well, you'd do something else with the horse. There's always something to do, there was. Well, then that farmer, well, he looked like a tramp. He had his coat tied round with a bit of cord. His shoes were on, toes hanging out. But he had four children at boarding school, and they came home for the holidays, and they helped with the haymaking. They drove the horses sometimes and helped reap it. When it was corn cutting time, of course, that was different. It was only horse machines. You had two horses machine. And you had to make the corn into sheaves, and others used to stick them in stoops, about three each side, you see, to dry. All changed nowadays, it is. And when I was there, I remember haymaking down in a field near a river, and the barges used to come by. And the people on the barges used to wave and used to shout back to them. In fact, I helped to move the locked gates for them sometimes. They had a horse on the pathway. And there was a stream in that field, and it was as clear water, the clearest water you ever seen, and full of watercress. Little things like that, I remember. Well, I left there, and I was sent to a farm that, so we had an organiser who used to tell us where to go to, you see. We had lodgings found. This organiser was a real lady. And I was sent to a farm at Goring Heath, near close to Reading. And that was only a small farm. But there was five or six horses there, I remember. And I did ploughing, all sorts of jobs I did there. Ploughing, harrowing and got all the ground ready for planting again. I've seen coaches, they were called charabangs in those days, I've seen them stop on the main road and all look at me doing it. Because the hardest part is where you turn round the corner when you just start to do your ploughing. When you get wide, it's easier all round. Well, I did all sorts there. I used to, they had a pony and trap. Bramble was a pony, used to be turned out the field. And used to have to try and catch that. If you know what it is like trying to catch a pony, used to try all sorts of dodges. Then I used to have to harness it up and take it to the station to meet the farmer's wife 7 miles away, because she'd been away. And she used to usually drive it back, and because I was a passenger. And the pony knew its way pretty well. And that was one thing. Another thing was I used to take the corn to the mill at Maple Durham. That meant about 5 or 6 miles on the main road and then going down winding lane to the mill at the bottom. For that, I used to take 2 horses. If I didn't take the trace horse sometimes, and put the skids on and off. The skids were like oval, semicircular blocks of wood. What you had to fix behind the wheels for going down, and that's right, for going down, and in front of the wheels coming up the hills, you see. And that meant stopping and putting the skids on. You used to call them skids. And I used to come back again, and I used to go to Reading Station, some of the railway station, with implements, farm implements, to put them on the rail to go elsewhere. Sometimes 1 horse, sometimes 2, sometimes 4 I'd have, because it depended on the heavy load. Used to have great big 4-wheel wagons, belonged to the Duke of Marlborough, by the way. And when I was coming up the Caversham Hill, I used to have to come up zigzag fashion. It's a steep hill. Well, it meant skids on to rest the horses now and again. And I've seen people there come out the houses to watch me. And then once I had to go to Reading Station with 2 horses with the farm implement to put on the rail. And coming back, 1 horse was 2-year-old and the other one was about 8 years old. When I was hanging on to the 1 2-year-old, they were roped together. We were coming under a railway bridge when a train thundered over. Oh, that 2-year-old bolted, but I was hanging on to it. And the pathways were crowded with people. And there wasn't much traffic. It was all horse traffic in those days. And I was nearly at the end of my tether when 2 soldiers jumped out. They saw what was happening. They jumped out and they stood in front. And that horse slowed down. And wasn't I thankful? I was nearly crying with fright. And they collected the other horse, roped it together again, hoisted me up on the horse, and I rode all the way back, 7 miles back. So that was that episode. Whilst I was there, there was a girl for cows, Alice Titcomb. She did for the cows. Well, one of the cows got in from the outside yard into the big farm barn one day, followed her in, she left the door open. The cow knocked against a machine, fell down, broke his leg. Had to tell the farmer. The farmer was away. The farmer's wife came up and she phoned the vet. The vet came with his helpers, 2 or 3 men helpers. And they so the farmer's wife asked if we could watch it, what they were going to do. And they said, yes, if you sit up above there, but you must keep very, very quiet. So she and we 2 girls sat there and we watched everything. And they killed the cow, and the cow was pregnant. And they took the calf from the cow, and it turned out to be an effer calf. That's one for milk. And the vet said, good gracious, he said, I didn't know it was so far advanced as this. Otherwise he could have saved it, but of course it died. Well, we had to bury it. And it was there where we lived in a shed. We stayed with the postmaster and a woman there, and they were moving elsewhere, so the farmer, like, he got us one of the sheds close to the pigsties, and we had that furnished out, and we lived in there. There was a forest the other side of the lane. And one night, we were kept awake. A lot of banging, bang, bang, bang. We didn't know what it was. We were frightened. Both of us were frightened. So we went out in the morning and we looked round very slowly, and it was a door been left on the latch, and it banged. Oh, we were thankful when we found that out. So,
where did you eat your meals?
Oh, we used to have our meals. We used to cook for ourselves in the little shed, you see. You see, we were fitted all up with everything we wanted. The farmer's wife had done wonders, rugs and everything we had there. And we used to cook whatever we wanted. Well, that was a happy little farm. Well, I decided I wanted to go fruit farming. So I was sent to Wisbeach up in Lincolnshire. There I met about 8 or 9 other girls and students and East Enders. The East Enders used to go all over the country to every farm doing anything. Crowds of them used to. And we went there. The first job we were given was to pick strawberries. And the farmer, Mr. Manning, he said, eat as many as you like. But he said, don't forget to fill the baskets. We had great big baskets to fill. Of course, he knew that if we had too many strawberries, we'd be ill. He knew that. So we did that. Well, after the strawberries were finished, we were put to picking the plums. We had to go up these tall ladders. Sometimes the ladders met nearly the end of the branches. You had to move them, you see, to pick the plums. And then we picked greengages. And the others picked all the Worcester pearmain apples. And the Bramley apples were left till March on the trees. There was not a leaf on the tree, but Bramley apples, huge they were. Well, in the meantime, we had to pick gooseberries as well. There's an art in picking gooseberries too. Let's just come. Has it come there? Oh. But the big gooseberry, the big dessert gooseberries, were picked by the farmer and all their usual workers. You weren't allowed to touch them. Well, when all that was over, you see, that was a season, I was asked to go and help 2 elderly doctors in their garden. Doctor grooms they were. They had a huge walled-in garden and about 8 greenhouses. Well, one greenhouse came straight from the house, full of climax and ferns and all sorts of plants. And you walked down through them, there was another one on the end of it. Then there was an orchid house, nothing else but orchids. Another one for cacti. And then there was an open space and a fenced-in, big as this room, fenced-in for all sorts of foreign birds they got, all sorts of foreign birds. Then you had to go across the lawn to the other greenhouses, 3 or 4 joined together. And there it was all plants in pots. Everywhere, plant, all on the shelves everywhere. And I was taught to test all the pots to see if they wanted water. And to keep the tanks full of water, because they only used aired water for watering. And then I was taught to sweep the lawns properly. There's an art in sweeping lawns with a besom broom. You know what a besom broom is? All twigs. There's a certain way of doing it. Well, then I used to weed the paths and dig the vegetables, all as they wanted for the house. I used to take them up to the house. And it was soon after that the war finished, and their man was expected back from the army. So I left. And my sister had married in that time. She married a Navy man, and she got a home in Portsmouth. So I went and joined her. Then they asked me, he had been on loan to the Australian Navy, because the Australian Navy never had many people then. He'd been on loan there for 2 years, and the HMAS Australia came into port, the ship he'd been on. and they asked me if I'd like to go on board to tea, so I did. Well, later that ship was taken back to Sydney and taken back and sunk with full naval honours for the, what it had done in the war. Well, then I was asked if I'd like to go on to tea on his ship again. That was HMS Wolseley, destroyer. So I went on to tea, and that was where I met my husband. He was playing a mandolin, and he winked at me. That did it. Well, when I was coming, when there was eight men in that mess, it was a petty officer's mess, there was eight men and they had their wives and children there. Well, I noticed they were disappearing, and I thought, oh dear, I'd better find my sister and brother-in-law. I couldn't find them anywhere. So I went to go up the gangway, that was nearly upright with the wall, and this, my future husband said, he said, where do you think you're going? I said, I'm going to try and find my sister and brother-in-law. I bet they're up top. He said, wait a minute. He said, I'll ask Jimmy if I can see you as far as the gates. It was February and dark, you see, because I didn't think about the darkness outside. And he was duty. So we had to ask permission to come out. He took me as far as the gates, carried on through the gates right along the other road and up the main road. And I said, how much farther are you coming? So I asked him two or three times, and he said, why? He said, don't you like me or something? He said, would you rather walk alone? I said, no. I said, I may as well tell you the truth. I said, I've got a young man waiting for me. Then you went in a little public house, and there was my sister and brother-in-law. It had all been arranged, I found out later. And he tested me to see if I liked port wine, and I didn't want it. And I didn't like it. I don't like it to this day. And so he finished it. Well, after that, it was meeting him every night. And we were engaged very soon after. We had to wait for nearly 2 years to get married because neither of us had any money. And in the meantime, I went to a doctor's house and I was nursemaid to their three little children, Dr. Maybury. And, oh yes, I was happy in the land army. It was outdoor life and I liked that outdoor life. And I was used to horses then because that was in my blood. See, my father later, well, he made a lot of money in Australia because he had Clydesdale horses. But it nearly all went in hospital bills. At any rate, that was that.
How were you treated by the farmers and the other labourers? How were you treated by the farmers and the labourers on the farm?
Oh, treated well by everybody. Oh, yes, they all welcomed us. You see, there was nobody to do the work. The men had been called up. They depended on Land Army girls. But what the Second World War was like, I don't know. But that was the First World War.
You said that people used to stop and watch you. Was that because you were
when they were in the charabangs, that was. That was the coaches, they called them later, because they were open-top charabangs in those days. And I've seen them when I got near the road end. They used to wave. Of course, I couldn't wave back. And I used to go round the corner with them, and they used to watch me. They used to turn round. They were still watching me going along round, because I could plough pretty well a straight furrow. Too. I was told that by the farmer. He said, you do very well. You see, you have one horse in the trench and one horse on the top. And you've got to be careful around the corner. Mind you, on the straight, it isn't so bad. But, no, I got used to all sorts of jobs.
Who taught you how to do everything?
The men. There used to be an older man or a farmer there to show you what to do. You never had a boy in front of the horse or anything. He'd come along and he'd show you straight away, and then he'd say, you take over now. And that's how you used to go on.
Did you find the work hard or difficult?
Well, I was young then in those days. I didn't take any notice of it. I was young and strong and healthy, because I was country bred and born, you see. Made a lot of difference. And we never had a doctor when I was a child, you know. My mother used to nurse us at home, and even with scarlet fever. Well, that had to be notified, and she used to have the big sheets at the doors all in disinfectant, And she used to change every time she went in and out the room we weren't allowed in. Because I've had scarlet fever 3 times, they tell me. Never had it so bad each time, you know, second and third time. But
were you ill when you worked in the Land Army at all?
I was healthy when I worked in Land Army, as fit as can be all the way through.
Did the other land girls enjoy the work?
All the other girls did too. Oh, yes, they all did. Well, I mixed with one at a farm only, to one farm only. And that was Alice Titcomb that did the cows, and that was all. The pigs and chicken were fed by the farmer and his wife and their family. You see, you didn't have anything to do with them. So it was horses only for me.
Were you ever lonely?
No, I was never lonely. I was always singing or whistling or something. And of course, always talking to the horses. As you go by the horse's ears, you know, they know everything you say. A horse knows everything you say. There were 2 horses on one farm and they used to try and bite you. Oh, you had to be careful then. Turn round and try to nip you. Those 2 I knew.
Were there ever any accidents with the animals or the equipment?
No, thank goodness, no. No. I suppose it was in my blood to be with horses. I bet what it was. Ever since I was a tiny dot, we've been used to horses and seeing the huntsmen, the red coats at the end of the garden, go down the field and all that kind of thing, you see. And our mother used to treat us for all sorts of ailments. She'd been a nurse too. And she used to go on the commons and she used to pick all herbs. She knew every herb, what they were growing. And she'd say, that's that and that's that. We didn't take any notice, but I wish I'd known then. Know now what I was taught then. And she used to mix things up and give you the medicine on her own.